This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Now, the opening drive.
Nobody said it was going to be easy. So I want everybody out there that's got their jobber down, that's wondering about, oh, did the Mariners finally hit a brick wall? Is water finding its level? Come on! We never said it was going to be easy.
You know what occurred to me? This is selfishly speaking.
I have no idea what occurred to you. Absolutely none, Jim.
This is going to make it sound like I'm making it about me. I guess I am. You know, since I made the smoke and lock prediction that the Mariners were going to make the playoffs, they've not won a game since.
I actually thought about you. And there were people that were not happy with your prediction.
Yeah, I think it was, when was the last show that we did? Monday?
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's when I said smoke and lock. They were off that day, and then they've been swept by the Yankees. It wouldn't have mattered if I hadn't said that, though. They still would have been swept by the Yankees.
I don't know about that.
Did you make it
a smoke and lock?
I got to say
it was a smoke and lock.
There are moments, Jim, where you say things you shouldn't, and I don't know if you should have just said what you just said and reminded us all that you affixed the kiss of death to the Seattle Mariners team.
Don't you think it's just more about the Yankees being that good and nothing to do with what some yahoo on a Seattle sports radio station says about it?
Nope. I actually think it has a lot to do with what you said, because there was a very cougarish element to yesterday's loss. I'll tell you that. Getting up five runs and then gacking it up. Yeah. Seen that show before on Washington State football.
Well,
usually
that's saying
I enjoy that.
That's saying we're ahead. Oftentimes we're clawing from behind without even being ahead. But no, yeah, that was a tough one yesterday.
It was the toughest. And then today's.
Did you feel like they were going to blow it?
Because yesterday? No, I did not.
When they were up 5-0, I thought, man, there's still a lot of time in this game. They're the Bronx Bombers. Felix was starting to tire there.
I did not. Once they got out of the inning, is it the fifth where Felix gave up the two runs on the broken bat single by Aaron Judge, which, by the way, was a great pitch by Felix. And Felix gave up two runs on a broken bat single where Denard Span kind of overran it. It was a fluky play. Felix pitched great. Like the biggest news out of this sweep for the Mariners is that Felix has now been good in three of his last four starts. Like that's I know that sounds like the finding a silver lining in a three-game sweep, but that's the most significant part.
Did you think, Dave, that we'd ever reach a point in this season where Felix, we'd be more encouraged about him than James Paxton? Because Paxton hasn't been good the last two.
No, probably not.
I mean, Paxton was okay today, but not good.
The look on his face after he gave up, I'm trying to remember which home run it was. Boy, he looked discouraged after that one. But, you know, here's how I came away. I did not think they were going to choke the game that they were up 5-0. And I thought that they were going to get out of it today. I thought that somebody was going to come up and get a hit. And I thought it was going to be Ben Gamel when I think it was in the eighth inning. But I feel like, and this is the ultimate justification, that they got lucky on a couple of there were some really, really good pitches that got hit out, especially by Marco Gonzalez. And it was Judge. It was Stanton. And Stanton kind of got his due today when Haniger robbed that home run from him. It was one of the best I've seen. The timing, looking at the wall, not touching the wall at all. I mean, the whole thing was fantastic. But, man, there were some really good down-and-away pitches that those guys hit out of the ballpark. So I just felt like, look, they went against – that's probably one of the toughest places to play because, you know, in Yankee Stadium, it just seems like some of those home runs that go out there, it just looks like a pop-up.
Yes, that park is built for this team, and there's a reason why the Yankees have the best home record in the league, and that's what the Mariners went up against. And they had a game that they should have won in yesterday's. They had a game that they could have won today in that they fought their way back. If I thought the biggest headline from this series from the Mariners' perspective was that Felix again pitched well, the biggest concern had to do with the guy on the mound today. And look, let's give James Paxton some credit, because after a rough first inning, he did come back and was impressive down the stretch.
Here's the pitch and a swing and a miss at a cutter for strike three. And James Paxton strikes out the side here in the bottom of the fifth inning. Paxton getting stronger and stronger as this ball game goes along. 9 strikeouts for the lefty from Lander, British Columbia. That's it for the Yankees in the fifth.
Now,
But Danny, come on. That's the kind of stuff we say about Felix. You know, except for that first inning.
No, I've got a different theory here for you.
Do you? Okay.
This is going to be something opening up. Do you remember when James Paxton got the cramp? got the cramp
yes.
after the third inning in Tampa Bay. That was June 10th. Because I've gone back and broken down his stats, BC and AC. BC being before cramp. Mm-hmm. Before cramp, his ERA was 2.95. His whip, walks and hits per innings pitched, was 1. His home runs he was allowing per 9 innings was less than 1. Since the cramp, which, look, not to undermine my own research, but since the cramp is the final 4 innings he pitched against Tampa Bay, then he's pitched against Boston and pitched against the Yankees, which are 2 really, really good offenses. His ERA, 9.55. His whip has almost doubled to 1.94, and he's allowing 3 home runs per 9 innings pitched, as before it was less than 1. Is Paxton hurt? Is the cramp that he's suffered somehow affected him now for more than a week?
Hadn't thought about it, but maybe so, because everything that we saw from James Paxton this year suggested that he's an ace, and every 5 days you're not going to get a performance. I don't care if it was the Red Sox or the Yankees, you're not going to see that from Paxton. He's going to shut them down. He's going to shut every team he faces down. But, yeah, you're right. The last 2 starts, 7 in the third innings, 14 hits, 10 runs. His ERA is up to 3.72, so it's not the James Paxton we were getting used to seeing, the 16 strikeout version of him and the no hit version.
And he climbed out of it. I mean, look, and this reminds me sort of Felix's performance where he struck out the last 16 of the last, or he retired 16 of the last 17 after having given up, what, 4 runs in that game, I think?
Was that against the Twins? I remember it was the start where he was awful in the first inning, and then all of a sudden was just a buzzsaw after that.
Yeah, there was an Oakland game, I think, at Oakland when he did that. And that's, at least you see Paxton battling his way out of it. And that's been kind of a theme for that we've talked about a lot on this show. I think that's the difference between this year and last year, especially with the rotation, is that last year you pull him after the second inning because he's just done. Like, it's not his day. Whereas, you know, they've been able to work out of it. And you mentioned the home record for the Yankees. Like you said, they're built for that stadium. Nobody's close. I mean, they're 29-11. I think the next closest is 24-13 with Cleveland. But, yeah, that's I was pretty – well – Mariners actually 25-14 at home, but I was okay with this having gone up, and I think that's a tough road trip. It's obviously a tough place to play. He worked his way out of it. I was worried about Paxton today though, because when he had that expression on his face, it looked like he was done. He had a very sad look on his face, and he hung in there and came back. And so we've gotten a lot of that from the rotation.
The trouble started early for James Paxton today.
And the 3-2, swinging a drive deep into the gap in right center field. Haniger going back to the warning track, looking up. Goodbye, baseball. Aaron Judge with a 2-run opposite field home run toward right center, and the Yankees jump out to a quick 2-0 lead here in the bottom of the first. Number 19 for Judge.
The story of this series, the story of it is the Yankees' power. Because what, they hit 2 home runs in the first inning today. They hit 2 home runs to key their comeback yesterday. Gary Sanchez with a 2-run homer in the 8th inning yesterday off of Alex Colomé that tied it. And then you had Giancarlo Stanton winning it with the 2-run homer. They bludgeoned the Mariners into submission in the first game of this series. And look, I agree with you. I thought Marco Gonzalez pitched pretty well. And he had some balls that were hit out of the park that you look at it and you're like, man, if that guy's going to hit that pitch out of the park, you can't blame him. The one, watching somebody reach and fish for some of the stuff that they ended up hitting out. And look, for today, all this different struggles, it was almost worse in that first inning, if not for the glove of Mitch Haniger.
Here, the pitch swung on, fly ball, deep center field. Haniger going back to the warning track near the wall, leaps up. Has he make the catch? Yes, he does! Mitch Haniger timing his leap at the top of the wall, taking a home run away from Giancarlo Stanton. Holy smokes! Haniger getting back to the wall. That was the key. And getting high in the air to pull it back. And there's one away for the Yankees here in the bottom of the first inning. What a catch by Mitch Haniger.
As you've done this, and Dave, I think you've kind of hit on a point here that maybe it's time to give a little stay to the Mariners. It's the first time they've gotten swept. And there's sort of a feeling of unease. How do you summarize what happened in this series and where these Mariners stand now? Because I think your point was, you're okay with how this went. That, yeah, they're competitive in 2 of the 3 games. They should have won one of them, could have won another one. But you're not even thinking about ringing any sort of alarm bell.
Yeah, well, and I think that a lot of the alarm bell comes from the past, the Mariners watching this for us as a show the last 6 years, and that and a lot of these situations, you know, somebody gets to the pitcher, a couple of hits, you know, you give up four runs in the first inning, it's over for that guy. Paxton's done, and I feel like that's great. Another thing you pointed out, Danny, and maybe we can ask Jeff Kingston about this, but the look on Zanino's face after, was it last night's game? And like, he was truly disappointed, sat there in the dugout for a long time. Like, you could see that he genuinely expected to win that game, and he was kind of mad about it. And I thought Marco Gonzalez looked the same way. So this is just a different team. And I think that having shed, that's the first time they're swept. I mean, come on. This is and where there's the best home field advantage in all of Major League Baseball. Yeah, I'm not going to fret too much over it.
Don't you feel like they needed to take one? That's what I came away from it, because I mean, we sit here and watch all the games, but if you're interested in the national perception of the Mariners, I would think if I'm back in New York on MLB Network and I'm coming on, I'm saying, well, okay, they're still not quite there. They still couldn't measure up with the Yankees. I mentioned in the email today that I suppose, you know, you're going to look at the Mariners now. They're still going to make the playoffs. They still have a 6.5 game.
Stop saying that.
Well, they have a 6.5 game lead over
an 8. Stop saying that.
Why?
Because.
It doesn't matter.
Don't you see what just happened?
It does not matter.
Just what just happened. I don't care if you think it doesn't matter. Stop saying it.
They're going to make the playoffs.
Stop it.
They are going to make the playoffs.
God.
You see these low-life teams that are behind them? I mean, come on. Even if the Mariners look, whatever you think, if the Mariners, they're not very good. They got swept by the Yankees. They're terrible. Even if you think that. What do you think the Angels fans are thinking about their team, that decimated team down there without Ohtani, Garrett Richards on the DL, a bunch of guys that are injured down there? Do you really think that Bob Melvin's team is going to somehow overtake the Mariners?
Depends
and Scott Service?
You keep talking.
Bob Melvin with that team down there, the 38 and 36, Bob Melvin should get consideration for manager of the
Not
year,
over
too.
Scott Service.
Not over Service. And then the next team in line, the Detroit Tigers. They're 36 and 39. They're going to make it.
Stop it.
But I still
Here
look at them.
Seriously.
You know, I still look at them. They're like the Buffalo Bills last year in the NFL. The Bills made the playoffs, but everyone knew, even in Buffalo, you knew that they weren't going to go all the way. And I think this tells us that they're not quite there. They're really good, but they're not the team that's going to go all the way. And yet you got to go back to March when we were thinking when the season started, man, I'll take that second wild card. And that's what they're in position to get.
That's your bright spot, that they're the Buffalo Bills?
They're the Buffalo Bills of Major League Baseball right now. And the Bills were the team that ended the longest streak last year. The Mariners are on the clock now, and so they're going to end that streak, and they're going to be just like the Bills. They'll probably be one and done, but still. What?
Oh, I like you saying that, because that increases the likelihood that they'll win the one game playoff.
That's right.
That's exactly right. I'm going to go with the opposite. Here's what I saw in Mike Zunino's face, and it was after the home run to Giancarlo Stanton when he hits the two-out or the two-run walk-off homer, which, look, that was a bad pitch. And Ryan Cook, yeah. I'm sure the moment that ball left his hand, he knew it. He knew it before he even turned around. You saw him shouting at the mound. It was an 0-2 pitch, and he left it out over the plate, and Stanton crushed it. But the camera stopped on Zunino in the dugout after that, as the Mariners did. And you read too much into guys. I know that I try to look at it and think, like, what's he seeing? Because on his face, I didn't see sort of shock. I didn't see any sort of, it wasn't even really disbelief. It was kind of anger of like, man, we let that one get away. We had that and we let that one get away. And it made me think of the idea of scar tissue. And this was something that Rick Sund, who used to be the Sonics GM, he talked about a young team needing to develop scar tissue, that you need to suffer some of the wounds. You need to suffer when you've got a young team or a team that's just starting to contend. There's a growing process where they have to become accustomed. They have to experience that disappointment to kind of toughen up, and that the scar tissue you get from a series like this is something that ultimately, if they are going to be a good team, and I do think they're a good team, I think that they'll learn from this, and I'll think they'll be tougher from it. Did they need to win one? Yeah, they did. And you really should hope to win two games in a series, because the Mariners are a team that was 20 games over 500, and it's an opportunity to show themselves. And look, they went up against one of the best teams in baseball, and they got drubbed a little bit. They got hammered around. They competed. They lost a game they should have won. They could have won today's, but ultimately They weren't able to get to the Yankees' bullpen, and they did give up too many home runs. And hopefully that this is something they learned from. Boston's lost a couple games in a row, but that if they're going to be the team we hope they are, this needs to be something that they get better from and not something that sort of strikes some a bit of doubt into them.
Yeah, well, and you look at, and somebody pointed this out on the text, that the Astros, who they're 13-1 the last 14 games, they went to Boston. They lost two out of four there. And then they went to the Yankees, and they lost two out of three there. So, look, it's a tough place to play. So I just think that there's different expectations and that there's a certain resolve on this team that, hey, we got this. And we talked about confidence and momentum and all those kinds of things. I think they've had enough experiences this year that they really feel like they should have beat that team. And so, yeah, there's none of that. So what I'm waiting for is the fans. And when are the fans going to come around? We talked about Jordan that parks cars down there at Seahawks facility, and he was talking about he's just not quite ready to buy in, but I am, and I really, after this series, it's not changed my line of thinking one bit as far as how I think this team is going to be and how successful they're going to be. I feel like this is a playoff team.
The other thing is, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. How many games have the Mariners won in their final at bat? Six. They've done it three times with home runs. Stanton's home run yesterday, second time they've been walked off with home. It happens. Like, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. You play a lot of close games, you're going to suffer some losses in close games, and it can't be this, like, all of a sudden your dauber's down. Everybody keep their daubers up. You keep a good eye on your dauber, and you keep it aiming up. I don't want to see any daubers down after this.
Did you think they should add Diaz in last night?
I didn't.
Non-safe situation.
I thought about tweeting about it just because it was an opportunity to stick it to you.
Yeah, because Chapman.
Thank God Edwin Diaz wasn't in there in a non-safe. But no, like, you're on the road. You wait till the lead. Like, you want to have somebody to slam the door shut.
All right. Well, okay, how are you going to feel if they go into Boston and get swept?
I'm going to feel very bad, Jim.
I mean, it's nice that we're looking at silver linings, and yeah, they competed, and yeah, they were ahead 5-0, and yeah, they gave Severino a go today. They had guys on the bases. They couldn't get key hits. They only lost 4-3, but aren't we past that with this Mariner team?
Yep.
I mean, that sounds like stuff that we would normally say about, you know, the Mariners in 2015 or 2010 or whatever. So, I mean, they got swept. I mean, they've lost four in a row now. I think there's some doubts. You go into Boston, and you got to win at least one.
You should be trying to win two.
And yet the pitching matchups, you look at them, LeBlanc against the knuckleballer Steven Wright.
No velocity in that game.
No. LeBlanc won. We know that. He retired, 22 in a row? They won 1-0. And so, okay, that's tomorrow. Then Mike Leake against Rodriguez, and that was a rematch of the Sunday game where Rodriguez, he's a good young pitcher, and Mike Leake had one rough inning.
Just one bad inning, Jim. Just one bad inning. Other than that, he was really good.
And then Sunday, Dave, I know you're going to look forward to this. It's Chris Sale against Marco Gonzalez. Oh, yeah. But favorable matchups for the Red Sox, especially being at Fenway Park.
Do you think Marco Gonzalez could whoop Chris Sale?
Yes. I think Gonzalez is a pretty good athlete.
He is a good athlete. He was a good hitter at Gonzaga. And I want to say he was a football player in high school, and he's pretty solid. I like the little fire I see from him. You think he can whoop Chris Sale, Jim?
Probably could. I'd give him a better chance than you, Dave.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Right, Rodriguez, Sale, we go LeBlanc, Leake, Gonzalez. And after that, four games in Baltimore, and then they got Kansas City and the Angels at home.
See, I just don't want to see them go into Fenway Park and lose two of three or get swept and then sweep Baltimore and then go, well, okay, they salvaged the road trip by winning four of the ten.
That would be better than... Sweeping Baltimore would be better than not sweeping Baltimore.
No, I know that.
All things being equal.
At the end of that, we'd look back and go, well, that was cool that they came back and beat the Orioles the way they did, but, boy, they sure haven't proven that they can hang with the bigger dogs.
If they don't win this series against Boston, if they don't win two of three against Boston, we come away from this 10-game stretch saying the Mariners saw how far they still need to go. Like, that's the upshot of it. They
might still make the playoffs. Like a 9-7 wild card team in the NFL.
Yes. We saw how far they need to go. It's Danny David Moore. We do have what I would consider, it's the most intimidating interview that I've ever done.
Hey, Dan.
That was how it started. That was Ice Cube.
Hey, Dan.
And I almost had a Fernando Rodney moment after that happened.
Oh, you almost?
Yeah. Caked my pants. Where I was like, when you have the great warrior poet Ice Cube say,
hey, Dan.
It's intimidating.
Are you going to go with Dan now?
No, but I don't mind whatever he calls me. Somebody else pointed out, I would have loved it if he said, hey, Dan, even though my name's Alex.
Dave, you and I were left out of this interview.
Yeah, well, I knew about it, but I was like, it sounds like it's
you
more...
You both knew about it.
Yeah.
I didn't know about it.
Well,
yep,
you
did.
I probably should have.
Here's the other thing that happened.
Jim, I'm getting tired of you and your damn morons.
Oh, wow. That's why you weren't invited.
He would have said that to your
so
face.
So what are we talking about to Ice Cube about? Is 3-on-3 league?
Yes, we are. We'll do that. It's time for us to take two right now.
Take two. Seahawks training camp opened and closed. It is completely sold out.
That's great. Everybody gets to go watch practice. Seriously, the fans going to those practices, it's one of my favorite parts.
12 of them. 12.
It's one of my favorite parts about how they do training camp now. I love it when the fans get in there. I think there's good energy and enthusiasm. And it gives us an opportunity to mix with the 12s.
It's always surprising to me, having been through 9 training camps, that people would want to come watch it. Because it was such a grind and so miserable. But it's awesome. What the Seahawks do down there and what Pete does in general. And this is another reason why Pete is such a good coach, and I think he's being underestimated. Creating like a game type of atmosphere out there when they're practicing is really smart. Because we always practiced in total silence out in the middle of nowhere. And you get in games and all of a sudden it's kind of a shock with all the noise and the music and everything. And so I love that he does that. And, I'm happy to see that fans are still really excited about this team because they should be.
Can I make one suggestion to the Seahawks? And, of course, I always complain about everything, right? The days that they're there, that the fans are there on the berm, do not practice on the fields that are farthest away from the berm. That's ridiculous. I know that they need to do something and, you know, for the grass and turf the dog and everybody, and they got to make sure that they keep the grass up to snuff or whatever. But when the fans are there, don't make them look way out there to see. I mean, they're there to watch practice. They're not there to get their binoculars out to be able to see it. So put the players right there next to the fans.
Well, there's one good reason for them doing that. Remember when Frank Clark punched Jermaine Ifedi? They were in the far field then, and that was a good move for that day because it was pretty vicious.
There's a campaign, a grassroots campaign, to get Ichiro to D.C. to participate in the home run hitting contest.
Yes, do it.
Why?
Love to see it.
Me too.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it'd be kind of fun.
He can hit home runs in batting practice?
He does.
Okay.
And he consistently clobbers them, and apparently he's been gearing up for it. Who wouldn't want to see that?
Me. He used to get another Mariner in there. I want Zunino, Cruz.
But it's Ichiro.
I don't care. He's a single slapper.
Yeah, but if he gets out there and wins the home run derby, wouldn't that be awesome? Legend of Ichiro?
I had a bet with somebody when Cano was in there a couple of years ago, and he's not like known as some big home run hitter. I think that's reserved for like the power guys.
But that would make it awesome if Ichiro came in and won it against the power guys. Like he would beat Stanton?
He's not going to win.
He's
not going to beat Stanton.
He could.
He and Griffey used to do it in batting practice. So, yeah, I like the idea, and Service was going with it, and I don't think it's going to make it.
Well,
but
look, if he's the only entry that we can get in there, get a Mariner in there, but wouldn't you rather see Zunino's the guy I would love to see?
Zunino would be fun, but I think I'd take Ichiro over Zunino.
Really?
Because if Ichiro won, it would be something you'd never forget.
I think Zunino is going to be the first guy to hit one out of Safeco. Where's the All-Star game in D.C. this year?
Yes.
Yeah. How's that ballpark there?
I don't know if it's not quite a bandbox like the AL East parks. It is Danny Dave and Moore. We've got a pinch hitter for Jerry DePoto coming up next. Another member of the Mariners front office. He talks to us about what's gone right and what went wrong in New York. That's next.
This is Danny Dave and Moore
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It is Danny, Dave, and Moore, and for the Jerry DePoto Show, we've got a pinch hitter this week. It's Jeff Kingston, also part of the Mariners front office, assistant GM. Jeff, we appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. What? All I ask is that you don't throw me a 104-mile-an-hour Aroldis Chapman fastball, and I'm good.
Yeah, I've seen enough of him. I'm just going to raise my hand and say that seems kind of unfair. In fact, I felt there should have been, once the Yankees traded him, there should have been a prohibition against him coming back to the American League. That Yankees team, we got a full view of everything they have, it's a pretty good franchise that they put, a pretty good team that they put together with all the home runs and all the velocity they've got coming out of the bullpen specifically.
Yeah, they have a really good-looking team. Brian Cashman and his group have done a tremendous job of rebuilding and putting together a lot of nice pieces, a lot of really good young-looking position players, obviously really good pitching and a great bullpen. So it was a good test for our guys. Obviously the middle game was a tough one that we let slip away. Today I thought we played them really tough, and we'll be looking forward to them visiting Safeco in early September.
Yeah, it will be a good opportunity to see what it'll be like when they get out to Safeco. At the risk of sounding like somebody that's going to focus and search for silver linings, I think we can be encouraged by the way Felix has pitched. His three of his last four starts have been not just solid, but really good outings that he's had. What have you seen from him?
Yeah, absolutely. That's been really encouraging. As you guys know, I think since May 8th, our starting pitchers have led the American League in both ERA and innings pitched. So that's been extremely encouraging for us. And Felix, when we talk about Felix, for me, I think the biggest thing I've seen from him over the last couple starts is it seems like that elite changeup as he's kind of refound that, especially last night, his season high, 17 swings and misses, most of which were off that changeup. That was his go-to pitch 3-4 years ago, and he had a really nice run, and he feels really good about that. He's getting his confidence back. That allows his fastball and his breaking balls to play even better. And so that's been really encouraging for us.
Hey, Jeff, you guys have done really a great job, you and Jerry both, with some of these trades, whether it's Haniger, Segura, getting Wade LeBlanc. And that's got to be tough to hang in there, because this is your third year here, and just you know, you're probably on the edge of your seat a little bit, hoping that these things were going to work out, and they did, and you're seeing this come to fruition. It's got to be pretty rewarding for you guys.
It has been, and this is easily the best stretch of baseball that this team has played since I've been here, and it's been a lot of fun. And I think a lot of it starts with just the chemistry in that clubhouse. You guys have talked about it on your show with the addition of D. Gordon and, you know, the Hanigers and Seguros. Yeah, that trade's really well for us so far, and just the back to the kind of chemistry and the clubhouse culture that these guys have set up. All really started in spring training. Scott and his group have done a great job, and it's just a really fun group of guys to be around. They play for the front of the jersey, not the back of their jersey. They pull for one another. They always believe that they're in the game. They compete until the last out, and it's been a lot of fun to be a part of.
Jeff, I'm just curious what you would say to Mariner fans who are a little disappointed by the sweep by the Yankees. The Mariners aren't ready for prime time, or they're coming back to earth. I imagine the culture, the chemistry, the rapport that you have there in the clubhouse is something that maybe you can address, or are there some flaws that we should be concerned about at this point?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think the key word here is perspective. You know, when you look back, we just swept the Angels. We split with the Red Sox, who are right there with the Yankees in terms of, at least from our standpoint, in terms of just overall talent level, two of the better teams in the American League. And Yankee Stadium, as you guys know, is not an easy place to play. But I think, you know, if you look at the big picture, we're still 12-7 in the month of June. We played the Red Sox really tough. We swept the Angels at home. We'll have another tough test here upcoming against the Red Sox. But even these last two games in Yankee Stadium, like I said earlier, we let that Wednesday night game slip away. Today's game against one of the best pitchers in the American League, we were right in it until the last out. And I think what I would tell the fans more than anything is, you know, traveling with the team, being around the team, being around the clubhouse, more than anything, these players believe in themselves, and they believe that they're going to win every single game. Doesn't matter who it's against, doesn't matter who they're facing, doesn't matter if they get down 3, 4, or 5 runs early in the game. They really believe in one another. They trust one another. They think they're going to win. And that's not going to change with one tough series here in Yankee Stadium, nor will it change if we have a rough series in Boston. These guys are going to continue to come out and compete, play hard, bring their A game. And, you know, I think the fans are going to enjoy watching them for the rest of the year.
The Mariners will move on. They'll take on Boston, a 3-game series beginning tomorrow, and then 4 games in Baltimore. We're talking to Jeff Kingston, the Mariners' assistant GM. There was at the end of the game yesterday, so after Wednesday's and Stanton had hit the walk-off home run, the camera caught Mike Zunino in the dugout, and it was interesting. I don't want to read too much into his facial expression, but you could kind of tell that it wasn't this sort of disappointment. There was kind of this anger, resolve that was there about, man, we let that one get away. And in some cases, I think that teams have to taste a little bit of disappointment, that this is part of the growing process for a team you have that's kind of raised the expectations all of a sudden.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you hit the nail on the head, the key word being expectations. I mean, these guys, they don't care what the Yankees record is. They don't care if they're playing a Yankee stadium. I mean, they really believe they're going to come in here and win the series. They thought they were going to win that game last night. Obviously, you can't win them all. You're going to have some tough ones like that. But just the facial expression on Mike's face, the guys in the clubhouse afterward, I mean, that one really stung a little bit. And it just goes back to the expectations, no matter who we play. Having that feeling like we're going to win every series we play, and when games slip away like they did last night, it's a tough one to swallow. But they came ready to play today. They'll be ready to play tomorrow, and they expect to win every series moving forward.
Yeah, I thought I saw that same look on Marco Gonzalez's face as well, because he made some really good pitches that Stanton and Judge hit out, golfed out of over the fence. So anyway, I'm just curious how important his development has been to this team.
Well, Marco's been tremendous. We've seen him come a long, long way. The development of his two-seam fastball, his cut fastball, his curveball has gotten better, and you alluded to it just now about some of the pitches they had out the other night at Yankee Stadium. I thought they were really good pitches that Marco threw. I thought he executed them really well. There are curveballs at the ankles, and sometimes you just got to tip the cap to the other team, to the other hitters. They have a very talented lineup that they were able to barrel some balls up. But I went home that night after watching the game in the ballpark and watched the replay in the hotel room, and my takeaway was, like, Marco pitched pretty darn well, and maybe the results weren't there. Maybe the Yankee hitters barreled some balls up, but he's been tremendous for us all year. He's been a huge lift. He's learned how to get through the lineup three times. He's pitching deep in the games. He's super competitive, and he's as convicted as any of these guys in terms of his ability to pitch deep in the games and help this team win. And he's been a huge shot in the arm for us so far this year.
Hey, Jeff, I picture Jerry DePoto being a guy that's got his phone in his hand at all times, and he's pacing in his office, and he rarely sits down. Is that an accurate description of him?
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody more excited on the face of the earth than Jerry DePoto at the winter meetings or right before the trade deadline. This guy's he's constantly itching to make moves, to make the ball club better. His phone's always on. He's always throwing ideas at us, texting us, emailing us, giving us a call, running scenarios by us, challenging us to come up with ideas to make this club better. It's a lot of fun to work with. He's got nonstop energy, and he's just constantly raising or pushing us to try to help be creative and give him some ideas to continue to make this club better.
I'm just curious, as an assistant, I assume that maybe you want to be a general manager yourself someday. What have you learned from Jerry DePoto?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things I've learned from Jerry is just the creating identity of who we are and then having conviction in that plan. Coming up, creating, developing a plan, and then sticking to it, sticking to the process, not let short-term results get into the way. I think you've seen that with his plan since the day one he came in here to help raise the floor, to bring in good players to complement our core four, and then to continue to get more athletic and to build something that's sustainable, not just for this year and next, but for the years to come. So that's been one of my biggest takeaways. And then the other one is just he's brought in a lot of really good people into this organization, whether it's Scott Service and the coaching staff, Andy McKay, and his new player development group, a lot of the new scouts that he's brought in. I mean, the group of people and the synergy that we have across entire baseball operations has been really eye-opening for me, and it's been great to be a part of.
Yeah, and Jeff, I think a lot of GMs and groups will say, yeah, we'll listen to anything, but it does sound like you guys. I wish you could tell us the craziest trade or idea that you guys have had, but it does seem like, more than anything, and I'm just curious, in your career, is it the widest sort of scope as far as possibilities that you've ever been around, as far as, coming up with wild trades that you just create out of midair? That didn't sound right, Jeff.
I don't think there's any.
I didn't mean to say out of midair.
No, but a lot of times you're throwing ideas at the wall, and you never know which one might stick or which one may create a little bit of momentum to it that then, the rise into an actual trade that comes to fruition. And Jerry loves, he just loves whiteboarding. He loves throwing in random ideas, and you know, one out of every 10 may pick up some momentum that may materialize or may result into further conversations. But he's always open, always willing to listen, to push the needle, to make things better. And I think that's probably the most fun thing about him, is that, you know, he's just constantly thinking, his mind's constantly churning. He's constantly looking at rosters, looking at numbers, trying to find different scenarios that make us better, versus just even as of a few days ago, we were 20 games over 500. You know, maybe a handful of other GMs kind of sit on their hands and feel pretty good about where they're at. And Jerry continues to you know, push the needle and step on the gas and try to find creative ways to make this team better.
I've described him as the Allen Iverson of baseball GMs. He's a volume shooter. Like, he's you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, Jeff.
As a Philly guy, I can relate to that analogy, Danny. AI Allen Iverson. They never saw a shot that he didn't like. And in some ways, that's Jerry. Never saw a trade that he didn't like. He's always open and willing to discuss trades. That's for sure. And I think, you know, that's actually a big benefit to him as a general manager. He has that reputation, which means that all the other 29 clubs, you know, frequently reach out to him and throw ideas his way, see if there's any fits. So you're much better off being in that camp than being on the other end of the spectrum where nobody wants to talk or deal with you.
Yeah, but Danny's end of the spectrum, Jeff, is that Jerry should just start chucking him up.
Yeah, I was like, he's been hot. You look at the deal for Marco, the deal for Leak. Like, yeah, he's hot. Just start heaving him up. Heat check.
Half court shot. Bank him in. Why not?
That's exactly right. Jeff, we're really grateful for you spending the time with us. It's great to get to know you. You're a big part of what they do there and what you guys have put together. It's such a blast to watch this season, and disappointing 3 days in New York, but hey, this is to get where you guys want to go. There's going to be some disappointments along the way. We're looking forward to you getting back on track in Boston.
I appreciate you guys having me on. Looking forward to a fun series this weekend in Fenway.
That was the Jerry DePoto Show, presented by Ram Trucks and by Geico. We thank Jeff Kingston. Don't forget, June 29th, you can join ESPN at CenturyLink Field for the inaugural Special Olympics Unified Sports Challenge. For fun, prizes, and a chance to support the 2018 Special Olympics USA Games, register a team of four to compete in activities like hot shot basketball, putting, oversized darts, bucket pong, and more. Again, all in support of the 2018 Special Olympics USA Games. Come into Seattle. Learn more at UnderdogSeattle.com. Two things happened, both of which are going to make Dave Wyman mad. We'll find out which one enrages him more. A streaker tackled by a football player or a soccer player flopping. That's shocking. Coming up next.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Got some news coming down. We'll talk to John Clayton about Jameis Winston, quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's expected to get a 3-game suspension. That was over something that happened with an Uber driver 2 years ago, March 2016. He was alleged to have inappropriately touched an Uber driver. We'll ask the professor about that. Also, the NBA draft, that gets underway. 5 o'clock, we'll keep you updated there. But two things came across. The first involves a streaker, although we should be clear, because this streaker, being Canadian, they didn't go full Monty. Like the exchange rate or something.
He had a jersey on and...
and boxer shorts. Yeah. Boxer briefs. But he was running around on the field, and, well, you can hear it as it's happening. He's running around. He's got underwear on. And eventually somebody hits him. You'll hear the reaction. Yeah, because he got belted. And it wasn't...
There it is. That was the eruption of fans.
Yeah, one of the players smacked him. This is a good hit. Looked like a cornerback.
Yeah, but it wasn't egregious or anything. Like, it seemed like he hit the guy, and then the guy laid down.
Guy went down like a sack of hammers, though, didn't he?
He's now been hired an attorney. Now, the attorney said that he's been contracted to represent him. They haven't said anything about a lawsuit, but I think we all see where this is headed. If you invade a field, aren't you fair game?
Look, I've said this. I mean, once you cross the lines, you're in harm's way. Absolutely. Plus, he was breaking the law, wasn't he? All he did was enforce that. It was like a citizen's arrest, basically. is what the cornerback did there.
The guy's, the security's not doing anything, so he solved the problem. The player did.
It was in Vancouver, right? It was against the Alouettes or whatever. Yeah, where were the security? I mean, when you watch a video, I mean, it takes security. I don't know how long it took them to get out there.
They weren't very responsive.
You know, when you're, those security guys get made to look stupid. So there are times where you see that they're trying to run a guy down. And so, I don't know, maybe they should get more athletic security guards. But how many times does that happen where somebody goes up? There's an old clip of Mike Curtis where a drunk fan, Mike Curtis was a linebacker for the Baltimore Colts back in the day in like the 60s and early 70s. And then he ended up a Seahawk, I think, that first year.
Yeah, he played on the 76 team.
Yeah, it was maybe like an expansion draft thing, whatever. Anyway, yeah, some guy came out and he picked up the ball and Mike Curtis came flying over and just knocked him on his tail. Knocked him on his wallet, as Steve Vrabel would say.
Made him fumble the ball.
He fumbled, he coughed it up, yeah. And so afterwards, one of his teammates was being interviewed and he's, why'd you do that? He goes, hey, I was enforcing the law. That's Mike Curtis. He was a nasty, wild man.
Now, here is the question for Dave Wyman, because you've also seen this clip, which is a Spanish soccer player, Pepe, who tapped from behind, not slapped, not smacked, tapped on the back twice from behind, collapsed in a heap during yesterday's World Cup match between Morocco and Spain, or maybe it was 2 days ago.
Entire game, and this is the end result here. Had some words with each other.
That's just a tap there. That's not what they were looking at.
I think I've tapped you on the back a few times.
Harder than that,
right? You stayed up.
Yeah, I did. I did.
Now, Pepe's been known to get into those confrontations over the...
More ridiculous. The streaker who's hit by the player hiring an attorney, or Pepe after being tapped on the back collapsing in a heap.
That's a great question, is because I just hate how everybody is looking to sue everyone else if something happens, especially when you put yourself in harm's way. But I cannot for the life of me understand the mentality coming from the mentality of the NFL was like John Elway. And that's kind of how I felt, is he never laid on the ground because he never wanted to anybody to think that they got him. And that's, you know, how I was. I get off the field, whether I'm injured, whatever. I'm never going to do it. And those guys, how do you rationalize that in your mind? The guy literally pats the guy on the shoulder and he falls down and looks up like, and he's screaming at him like, why? Why did you do that? It's so weak and just ridiculous and false. I mean, everything about it is just, it's disgusting.
It's the worst part about soccer. What's worse? Streaker hit hiring attorney. Flopping soccer player.
I'll go with the streaker. I mean, he's out there, and he deserved to get hit, and there's just no way that any court of law would allow him to get damages from that.
Yeah, I hope the judge looks at it. Get out of here. Get!
Yeah.
Get! It's Danny David Moore. We got the professor coming up next.